From KCRW, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business. Armando Iannucci's new movie, The Death of Stalin, explores the chaos surrounding the sudden death of dictator Joseph Stalin in 1953. Iannucci found that things that really happened were so crazy he had to downplay reality. That's what he did in a sequence based on real events that transpired when Radio Moscow learned that Stalin wanted a copy of a live concert that it was broadcasting one night. The only problem? The station hadn't been recording, but no one dared to tell Stalin.
And what they do is they lock the doors, they tell everyone, we're going to do it again, this time we're going to record it. The conductor faints because he's so terrified, he faints and he knocks himself unconscious. In the film, they scour Moscow and they bring another conductor in the middle of the night in his pyjamas and he conducts it. In real life, they actually got through two more conductors because the first conductor from outside that they brought in was drunk. So they had to get a third conductor. But I thought if I put three conductors in, no one will believe it.
Iannucci, known for his biting satirical takes on modern British and American politics in the TV shows The Thick of It and Veep, talks about finding a balance between comedy and terror for the death of Stalin. And he addresses his reaction to allegations against Jeffrey Tambor, who has a major role in his film. But first on the news banter, a progress report on Time's Up. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW. I am joined by my partner in banter, Matt Bellany of The Hollywood Reporter. Hello, Matt.
Hi there.
So, Time's Up. I just did a story, which we published in The Hollywood Reporter, about the state of play with Time's Up. And I will tell you, it's tricky because so many people so passionately want this movement to work. The thing is, as we reported, Time's Up, I don't think they had any inkling of how much fuel there was in the atmosphere that when they lit that match, it just exploded. Worldwide, everybody was like, yes, let's have this happen. And it became a thing well before there was a structure. And at this point, they're trying to reverse engineer an organization with a million different voices from different parts of Hollywood. And a lot of people in Hollywood, you know, paranoia is their morning brew. And so there's all sorts of suspicion about where did it originate? Where is it going? Who's in? Who's out? And I personally hope that they can really pull this together and make it into a thing. But I was struck by how hard it's going to be.
Right. And some of the issues that you pointed out is that this organization launched without a clear leader. And, you know, they've been able to raise an extraordinary amount of money, more than $20 million, to fund a legal defense fund for women outside of the entertainment industry. But when you're galvanizing this support within the entertainment industry, it's tough to do that without a clear leader and without clear structure. And that's what they're grappling with right now.
Yeah. I mean, initially, they didn't want a leader. I mean, there was a question asked when a group from this Time's Up organization appeared on CBS This Morning with Oprah Winfrey. Let's just listen to that.
Well, how do you get things done with no leader?
Well, we're women.
So Tracee Ellis Ross is saying there, you know, we're women. But the reality is, I think they've come to recognize that you cannot not have a leader, that they are actually looking to hire somebody who can be in charge. But even once they do that, I somewhat fear for that person because there are so many issues that Time's Up wants to address. And everybody comes to the table with a different idea. You know, is it about a nudity clause in a contract? Is it about women and people of color? And all of these are probably worthy causes. Some of them may be more fringy. Some of them may be more central, but sorting through all of that with powerful people pushing their concerns, that is daunting.
Right. And then an issue that you had raised in your story is that there had been some suspicion around Hollywood that initially, when this organization started, it was heavily focused on members of CAA, one of the talent agencies.
Agents and, yeah, personnel from there.
And, you know, specifically this agency that had been so closely aligned with Harvey Weinstein. And there were some dual issues there with whether this Time's Up movement would be used to kind of recruit new clients or allow agents to have better relationships with actresses and other powerful people in Hollywood for business purposes, and also whether CAA was pushing this organization in order to either deflect or to refocus attention, not on their relationship with Harvey Weinstein, but on moving past that.
Yeah, or their own institutional issues in-house. You know, other women are being brought in. There was a question of people who wanted to be invited to meetings and couldn't figure out how to get invited to meetings, and they complained. These are things that are streaming through the chatter of Hollywood right now. You know, you can dismiss it as a bunch of chatter, but the truth is these are things that will have to be addressed. It has to be inclusive. It has to be somewhat structured and organized, or it will not be what it wants to be, which is not just a moment, but a movement. Let me pivot to another big story that's going on, Disney, which seems to be at the center of everything right now. Disney has so many tentacles in this business. On the one hand, they are about to launch American Idol. That is a question of whether or not they can make money. And it's, you know, they're buying Fox, which was the original home of American Idol, but now they're trying to reboot. And I can't help but wonder, in a way, about Ryan Seacrest. You know, there were allegations against him raised in Variety. I found his denials to be very carefully worded and not necessarily conclusive. And the contention of E, where he was, you know, working that day, he works everywhere, working the red carpet, you know, they said they investigated and found nothing. But I feel like people aren't quite so sure. He had issues with his red carpet show. Some talent clearly avoided him. The ratings weren't so great. And now he's going to be, once again, you know, in this thing that he originated at American Idol that he does very well. But is it going to create discomfort?
Yeah, and this is the question for Disney. I mean, they have bet massively on American Idol. They are paying Katy Perry $25 million to be a judge on American Idol. Seacrest is getting $10 million. They are heavily invested in this across platforms, ABC and through the parks and through their digital divisions, through their music divisions. This is a gigantic step for Disney on American Idol, and they've got at the center of it the first person they went out to, Ryan Seacrest, is now embroiled in this scandal, and I don't know if he's going to be able to shake this.
I don't either, and it's not just American Idol. It's the morning show with Kelly Ripa. He appears in so many, I don't know how the guy sleeps. We've always wondered that, but there's so much writing on him, and there were reports that when the red carpet happened at the Oscars, talent from either NBC or Disney was pressured not to avoid him, and I find that kind of appalling, honestly. I think people should be able to decide whether they want to talk to him and not be pushed by these giant corporations.
Now, with American Idol premiering, the first few episodes, like normal, are taped in advance. But when they get to these live shows, they're going to have to court artists to perform on these shows. They're going to have to get celebrities to appear. And that's where you start to see whether people are going to be comfortable endorsing the host of Ryan Seacrest in association with Idol. If it continues as it is right now, it's probably going to die down, in my opinion. But if any other accuser comes forward, or if any further details emerge, I think ABC and Disney has a real problem.
As does E and NBC. And I'm just going to mention quickly that Bob Iger theoretically addressed the fate of Fox Searchlight, and they, of course, have again won an Oscar Best Picture with The Shape of Water. A lot of people concerned whether Disney is going to maintain this thing, which is not what we would think of as Disney, you know, with edgy films. He said, we have no plans to change it, but the main words, and it kills me to see all these people saying, Iger declares Fox Searchlight will not be changed, when he really said, right now we have no plans. And those are the two words that my eyes went to right away.
I don't know if you're parsing that too much. I would be happy if I worked at Fox Searchlight to hear anything at all on this subject. But as with everything in corporate America, you never know.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
That's Matt Bellany, editorial director of The Hollywood Reporter. The new movie, The Death of Stalin, is a political satire that walks a fine line between comedy and tragedy as it follows the chaos in the Kremlin following the sudden passing of the Soviet leader in 1953. Stalin left no clear succession plan, so once he was gone, a struggle for control ensued. As depicted in The Death of Stalin, those competing for power include a hard-drinking Nikita Khrushchev, played by Steve Buscemi, murderous secret police chief Lavrenty Beria, played by British stage actor Simon Russell Beale, and the easily manipulated Georgi Malenkov, played by Jeffrey Tambor. Having learned that Stalin has suffered a massive stroke, these men scramble through the woods surrounding Stalin's country estate, each racing to be the first to reach the fallen leader's daughter, Svetlana.
All right, we need to start putting together a plan. We need change. Put a halt to the arrests, prison releases, maybe even reform the church.
How can you run and plot at the same time?
Hello, Svetlana!
They're trying to cut you off.
Where?
It's obvious. Svetlana!
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 The Death of Stalin was written and directed by our guest today, Armando Iannucci. He's well-practiced in the art of political satire, having created the British TV show The Thick of It and the HBO comedy Veep. Russia's attempts to influence the 2016 election are a red-hot topic now, but Iannucci said he filmed the movie months before the current occupant of the White House was elected.
It was shot in the summer of 2016.
Who knew, right?
Who knew? So it was really seen at the time, I was thinking of as a sort of gentle warning of what might happen if democracy goes awry. But by the time it got all cut together and we started screening it, it felt like a very loud warning, really, about please God, let this not happen again. I'm not saying that Trump is Stalin, by the way, but...
just to be clear.
But, you know, that obsession with authoritarianism and...
Well, he certainly seems to have great admiration for authoritarian
leaders. He does. He loves, you know, your Putins and your... whichever Kim is in power at the moment.
Jong-un.
And also, you know, Stalin called his opponents enemies of the people. It's a Stalinist phrase, to the extent that when Khrushchev took over, he banned that phrase, enemies of the people, because it was too Stalinist. And within days of Trump becoming president, he called, was it CNN and NBC, enemies of the people. And it's that thing of instinctively wanting to criminalize your opposition. You know, rather than say, I disagree, it's no, no, no. By disagreeing with me, you are unpatriotic. That's the other thing. We're seeing it a lot in the UK over Brexit. If you step out of line on Brexit,
right,
you're labelled in some of the press as treacherous.
It really seems to be sweeping the world. I mean, just
yes,
have seen this with the Italian elections.
It's like, yes.
What
and,
is going
and in
on?
Eastern Europe, very strong. You know,
Poland.
And it is a frightening... And that was part of the reason I wanted to make the film, actually, because, you know, this has been going on for some time.
It's been brewing.
It's been brewing for a while. And having done Veep for 4 or 5 years, I thought, actually, the next thing I wanted to do... Interestingly enough, I was thinking of doing like a fictional, something about a fictional dictator, a contemporary fictional dictator. And then the graphic novel, The Death of Stalin, was sent to me and I read it. And instantly I thought, well, this is the story. But it's true. I mean, it happened.
I mean, there was so much killing and raping,
yes,
honestly, that I
yes
wonder, I feel like you were testing yourself in a way. How can I walk the razor's edge here between the worst tragedy and comedy?
Well, for me... The fact that I wanted to tell the story was the fact that the comedy in it, because it was based on truth, it somehow felt, it felt like a comedy of anxiety and a comedy of panic. People behave oddly when they start to panic. So it's a different sort of comedy. And what I wanted to do in the film, you're absolutely right, is have those two things running simultaneously, the anxiety.
It's a very tricky tone.
As well as the comedy. But and I knew that's what the edit was going to be all about. The 5 months I spent cutting it afterwards was going to be about getting that balance absolutely right so that the comedy and the tragedy ran alongside each other and complemented each other, supported each other, didn't detract from each other. That was where the hard work went, actually.
So you don't show much of the violence, but you know that
no,
it's happening.
Yes, yes.
Did you film it?
Yes. In this editing process, I took out some funny moments that I thought actually punctured the drama, and I took out some really graphic moments that I thought just tipped it the other way. I think expectation is such a powerful weapon to have in a film, you know, anticipation. It's when you're anxious that something might happen rather than being led to predict when the next thing's going to happen. I
yeah
think that's the key thing.
Well, and there's a limit to how much you could really deal with. I mean,
yes,
people
absolutely
being knocked off left, right, and center.
Yes.
I don't think it's much of an exaggeration at all, right?
No, no, no. If anything, we toned it down. We
yeah
toned it down. The opening scene in the film is based on a true story where a concert is being broadcast on Radio Moscow and Stalin rings up live and says, can I have a recording of this? And the guy in Radio Moscow puts the phone down and asks the engineer, are we recording this? And he says, no, 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 it's going out live. And he thinks, oh my God, I'm going to be shot. And what they do is they lock the doors, they tell everyone, we're going to do it again, this time we're going to record it. The conductor faints because he's so terrified. He faints, and he knocks himself unconscious. And this is all true. In the film, they scour Moscow and they bring another conductor in the middle of the night in his pajamas and he conducts it. In real life, they actually got through two more conductors because the first conductor from outside that they brought in was drunk. So they had to get a third conductor. But I thought if I put three conductors in, no one will believe it.
Yeah,
so I
that's
had to
true
actually tone it down.
So you couldn't, I mean, I doubt that Putin would be really like this movie.
Well, we were all set to get released and we got the license. You have to get a license in Russia.
I mean, I'm really, like, I know you guys, you thought they were going to let you show this film in Russia?
Well, we got the license. That's the thing.
That's
so
strange.
So
they
we
saw
got
the
license
movie and
yeah
gave you the license.
And they gave us the license. It was all dubbed into Russian and all set to go out in the cinemas. And then 2 days before the release, the Ministry of Culture showed it to some other people and then announced that the license was withdrawn. And they said it was part of a Western plot to destabilize Russia. And
amazing.
I know how Vladimir Putin is very anti the idea of anyone interfering in, you know, the elections of another country.
Yes, he would never countenance anything like
that.
So,
you know, you could see his principles in place there.
Highly principled.
But it just seems so kind of old-fashioned to talk about being banned, because everything is accessible now. You know, people in Russia want to see it. They'll find a way. You know,
they sort of know what the reality of Stalin was, right? But I don't know how they...
Yes.
It's not officially told story.
No, it's very ambiguous in Russia what they're told about Stalin. They're told, really, it's up to you to decide. You know, that some people say he killed millions. Other people say he won the war and he industrialized the country.
Right.
You decide. There is no official position on Stalin in Russia.
But we really do think that Putin kind of worship Stalin.
Well, the idea of the strong leader is very... I mean, if you go to Moscow now, you see statues to strong leaders. There's Peter the Great, there's Stalin. There's even Tsar Nicholas II. There's a huge statue to him now. So it doesn't really matter where on the kind of...
As long as you were
the spectrum,
strong.
The historical spectrum they come, as long as it's a sort of individual authority figure.
So you went to Moscow and before shooting to...
Oh, yes, to research.
Yeah.
Absolutely, because I wanted to get this absolutely right. Part of what I said at the start of the production was, look, one thing we have to be is very respectful of what happened to the people in Russia at the time. The comedy's all in the Kremlin, but the reality of what happened, the effects of that, is seen for real out in the streets. And I wanted to get it right. So we spoke to people who grew up under Stalin, whose maybe relatives or parents had been arrested, gone to the gulags. They told us little details that we put in the film. You know, through the night, you'd go to bed with wearing lots of clothes, so that if you were taken out of your apartment in the middle of the night off to the gulag, you had lots of clothes on you. So we put that in. But also, I just wanted to get the look of these buildings absolutely right. We shot most of it in London, but we found buildings and
I mean, I've not been to Moscow, but from what I've seen of Moscow, it looks Moscow.
One of the kind of most satisfying things is when Russians who've seen the film say to me afterwards, "Where in Moscow did you shoot this?" And I have to say, we shot it in London, and they just don't believe me, because we went a lot of trouble. We visited Stalin's statue, we visited the Kremlin, we visited the apartments.
Did you would say we're doing this for a film, or did you just fly under the radar?
Oh yes, no. We hadn't finished the script then, thankfully. So when they said, "Could we see a script?" we could quite validly say, "Oh well, we're still writing." But they knew what it was for, and we were allowed to look round. You know, it's
did
not...
you have a sense they were keeping an eye on you, though?
Oh, very much so. Yes, very much. People would suddenly just appear in my vision, like 2 feet in front of me, wearing dark glasses and dark ties and suits.
Really?
Very friendly,
casting.
But they would just wag a finger when I was looking at places that I shouldn't and just go, "No, no." And you'd sort of think, "Okay, well, thank you for letting me know," and you'd walk away.
I'm going to walk away now. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah.
So was there any issue about financing? I mean, did everybody say sure? I don't know who everybody
came
was.
Together very well. It was all financed by Gaumont.
Gaumont, the French
yes,
studio.
Yes.
The funding all came from Gaumont.
Yes. And so that happened really quickly, really. And
so they wanted a film based on this graphic novel.
Yes, yes.
I mean, I think that's a hell of an ask, to be honest.
I know. And what happened was they got in touch with me and said, "We think you should direct it." And,
really?
And I said, at the time I was making Veep, and I said, "Yes, but I've got to finish Veep." And they said, "How long will you be?" And I said, "Another 18 months. And they just went, "We'll wait." So
they really wanted you.
And projects normally don't happen like that. Normally it's a bit of an uphill struggle, but this happened so easily. I'm very, very grateful for their patience and their support, really.
Coming up after a short break, Armando Iannucci talks about finding that one of his stars, Jeffrey Tambor, was accused of sexual misconduct while making the TV series Transparent. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today we're talking to writer-director Armando Iannucci. His new satirical film, The Death of Stalin, is in theaters now. The Death of Stalin deals with the chaotic scramble for power that ensued following the Soviet leader's fatal brain hemorrhage in 1953. In the film, as in life, Deputy General Georgi Malenkov, played by Jeffrey Tambor, is named premier. But he's far too much of a lightweight to last. When Stalin's distraught son Vasily, played by Rupert Friend, arrives in Moscow, he has a request and Malenkov has an answer, sort of.
I want to make a speech at my father's funeral.
No problem.
Technically, yes, but practically.
When I said no problem, what I meant was no problem.
The death of Stalin is Iannucci's first time making a satire about real historical events, but not his first time tackling a government that's not his own in his native United Kingdom. He created the HBO comedy Veep in 2012 and served as showrunner for the first four seasons. In its early years, Veep followed Vice President Selina Meyer, played by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and the ambitious aides and associates who surrounded her. Among them, gangly, self-proclaimed ladies' man Jonah, played by Timothy Simons. In the early going, Jonah is a low-level White House liaison who often finds himself on the wrong side of Madam Vice President.
J. Diddy, ladies, get giddy.
Jonah, hey, listen, settle something for me.
Okay.
You like to have sex and you like to travel?
Yes, ma'am.
Then you can.
But I shall be right here if you need me, like the mighty oak that stands for smemp.
You did not have qualms about the idea for Veep and being an American show?
No, I did have qualms. I mean, two things. I always was knowledgeable about American politics. I think maybe in the UK, we get more of a sense of American politics than you
Definitely.
Would of UK. Yes. So we do get more than the headlines. But I'm also fascinated by it as well and have been, for a long time, been reading around it. But I did think when we were asked by HBO to make something set in DC and we decided on the vice presidency, I thought what I had to do was come out and do the research, actually go to Washington, meet the people, talk to senators, their staff mainly, get a sense of who the,
yeah, they know what's
what
really
the
happening.
Office is like and yeah. who are the key people in the office. And I was sure that after a lot of that, that we got it right. And we also had consultants working on the scripts with us who were based in Washington. But I was convinced in the end, when we made the pilot in the first season, that we'd made something funny and something that I liked. And I think something that was, in its own terms, worked. I thought it would be a niche, kind of maybe cult viewing. And I did think at some point, someone along the line was going to say, how dare these Brits come over and tell us, you know, what's wrong with our politics. But the opposite happened. And it struck me how, you know, what a generous and open country America is, irrespective of how Donald Trump projects his closed borders, in that you welcome ideas and you welcome talent from everywhere. And a lot of people said to me, it maybe needed someone who wasn't brought up in the partisan red state, blue state divide to look at it objectively from outside and dare to point out the absurdities. I found that very refreshing.
I mean, you stepped away then just in time before all of it became too real.
I'm kind of relieved, actually, because I think any fictional attempt
you just can't
to portray what's going
up.
On now, it would never be as absurd as what is going on now.
Well, so you yeah. took on American politics and now the Russian politics,
yes.
which is
yes.
also a nuanced and culture-specific thing.
Yes. And I was aware it wasn't contemporary. It was also the first time I've done a
right.
historical
period. Mm-hmm.
period piece. So there was all of that. For me, it was all about getting outside my comfort zone. And I also knew I was going to be shooting stuff that wasn't funny. It is a funny film, but I know there are scenes in it that are not meant to be funny. And for me, that's actually a new experience.
So casting, you mix it up. You have
yes.
Steve Buscemi playing Khrushchev.
Yes.
And I don't know who plays Beria.
Beria is Simon Russell Beale, who's a great UK stage actor. He's very famous in UK as a sort of Shakespeare and a classical stage actor. Very rarely does television and film, but he's brilliant. And I wanted, because we in the West don't really have this conception of who Beria is. Beria is the sort of the arch villain in the
yes.
film. I like the idea of having someone who the audience doesn't recognize as a familiar figure from other movies.
Yes.
So that Beria comes at you in the movie whole and complete and with the greatest amount of impact. I then thought, what I don't want to do, though it's set in the Soviet Union, I don't want to do a whole cast doing fake Russian accents.
Right.
It slows everything down. And also it makes it feel unrealistic. It puts a kind of slightly translucent curtain in front of the screen and the audience, I think. Everybody talking like that. And, yes. And as the Russian press
weird.
Said when they saw the film, they said, thank you for not doing it because we hate it. And I'll tell you why we hate it, because it's always wrong. The thing is, there are so many Russian accents.
Right.
And in fact, the Soviet Union was an empire. It wasn't just Russia. It was Ukraine. Stalin was from Georgia.
Yeah.
So he spoke a completely
different language.
As did Beria. Khrushchev was Ukraine. So what I wanted, having decided, okay, we're going to do it in English, I'll have as diverse a range of dialects and accents in English. You know, we'll have American, we'll have Southern English, we'll have a spread to give you that idea that this Kremlin was full of people from different backgrounds, different strata in society, and different nationalities.
So the awkward thing here now is when the Time's Up moment, you have Jeffrey Tambor, great actor, but
yes, great.
Awkwardly
and
situated.
And he gives a fantastic performance in the film. And I think we're still trying to work out just what is the... There are so many sort of complex responses to this whole story that, you know, I can't come up with a pat kind of answer.
Yeah, it's very difficult
that.
Because you don't know what was alleged. You know that they decided they couldn't keep him on transparent, yeah. But you
and,
don't.
And
it seems going
confined
around.
To that one production from what I know.
Right.
And yet I don't quite know what
we
the,
don't know.
What the
yes.
story is. So I think one has to be mindful of all these things. The last thing I want to do is discourage anyone from coming forward and speaking out. And, you know, I'm sure that what we're hearing is just, you know, 0.0% of what's actually happened.
Yes,
and there's
the
a
tip,
lot
the tip
more
of the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely, to come out. But also, you know, we shot the film 2 years ago and the film's already been released in the UK and around the world. And I have to be respectful of that as well. And also I have to be respectful of the performance Jeffrey gave and the fact that, you know, he still needs that time and space to deal with the story and the allegations. And
I mean,
so
it's a difficult, just leaving him aside, you know,
yeah.
Just as a director or a filmmaker, you know, do you sort of say, I just don't want to hire this person because I don't know enough to feel comfortable? And what do you do?
I don't know because, as I say, you know, everything was in the can and finished and distributed even.
You didn't have to answer
this, this
it. You're thinking, I hope
but,
I don't
but
have
I
to.
But I have been through this before in a UK production.
Oh,
and,
really?
And with an actor. And my feeling was, you know, I have to get a sense of, do I know what happened? Has whoever the allegations been against, have they had time to state their case? And sometimes that means actually asking them to step away while they're involved in the production. It's not going to do anyone any good because they're just going to get through every day having to answer these questions again and again and again. And it's, but I remember saying at the time...
How long ago was that?
Oh, this was about 5-6 years ago. This was before people... I remember saying, when I know, and then I'll make my decision.
Did you ask the actor in the thing you were just referencing to leave?
Because we don't in the UK do these regular annual seasons. I was doing the thick of it, and it was once every 2.5 years. I said at the time, okay, well, there are no plans to do another season, but once we do, I'll make my decision. And by the time we were, you know, I knew the situation, and I had no hesitation in recasting.
So do you still watch Veep?
Oh, yes. I haven't seen all of the last season, to be honest. But I remember sending a note to Dave Mandel, the new showrunner.
Yes, he's been a guest on our show.
All right. Saying how much I enjoy not knowing what's going to happen next. Because,
yes,
of course, when you're
different.
Running it, you know, you see every episode 100 times in the edit. And it's always a great testimony to the cast if you're still laughing. But what I enjoyed was just laughing as a viewer, as a member of the audience, really.
Armando Iannucci is the director of The Death of Stalin. Thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can subscribe to The Business as well as other great KCRW podcasts at kcrw.com/podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.